The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone, where local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. Listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.FM is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO abduction phenomenon. And our guest today is Bill Konkoleski. Bill has been state director for the Michigan chapter of the Mutual UFO Network since 2004. After a lifetime of his own UFO and abduction encounters, he spent the last three decades actively investigating these otherworldly phenomena, trying to make some sense out of the bizarre events that have happened to him personally. What he's discovered confronting these cosmic mysteries is that reality is far stranger than he could have ever imagined. Konkoleski is the author of the autobiographical book, Experiencer, Raised in Two Worlds, and his sequel, Experiencer 2, Two Worlds Collide. His personal abduction experiences have been chronicled in the sci-fi documentary, Abduction Diaries, streaming documentary, Abducted by Aliens, UFO Encounters of the Fourth Kind, television series Alien Conspiracy, They Are Here, and the ABC news special UFOs Seeing is Believing. He has also served as a consultant to the History Channel's Hangar One and UFO Hunters, National Geographic Channel's The Truth Behind, as well as the Science Channel's Uncovering Aliens and Close Encounters. Bill is a return guest on this show, and we're always honored to have him back. So welcome back, Bill.
Thanks so much for having me on, Dave.
It is our pleasure. So for those of our listeners, I doubt if there are any, but give us who are not familiar with MUFON, give us a little background on MUFON, what it does.
Sure. MUFON is the world's largest civilian UFO research organization. We've been around since 1969. I haven't been around since 1969, but the organization has. There are over 4,000 members in 40-plus countries. And what we do is we take UFO reports from people on the street. That could be by email, sometimes by phone. And we'll look to see if we can identify what somebody has submitted to us, something they don't understand, and maybe they need our help to try to figure it out. Now, of course, some of the more enriching moments are those cases where you try your hardest to figure out what somebody's seen, and it's so exciting and so unusual that you're not able to come to a conclusion. Though I will say, a very small percentage of those cases remain unidentified. Most of the ones that we can actually investigate, we can figure out what it is that the witness is seeing. I've been around in MUFON since 93. Mm-hmm. So that's 28 years. And yeah, state director now for Michigan for the last 17 of them. And I'll just add too that in case anybody's wondering, like, oh, you know, does MUFON get what, a half a dozen reports in a year? We tend to average about 200 reports a year just in Michigan alone.
Just in Michigan.
And yeah, and blast that out to the rest of the country and the rest of the world, and we get thousands of cases in every year, and we do our best to figure out what it is that people have seen.
Very good. Okay, and so recently the Pentagon has stated, and the Navy has stated, that the UAPs, as they're now called, Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, is a real phenomenon, and they're not fictitious, and don't make fun of people who have claimed to have seen them or encountered them. So what are your thoughts on the Congressional UAP report?
Yeah, there are a lot of things that I have in mind when it comes to this report. First of all, it's a step. It's a baby step. It's pointed in roughly the right direction, but it has some deep flaws to it. And one of the things about this report, so on June 25th, this report comes out, and it talks about, I think it's 143 sightings, 142, somewhere in there. And what has been stated in this report is that every one of the cases from the military and from the Pentagon, every one of these cases where they collected sighting reports that people reported to them within their network, and they didn't know what they were only able to identify one of these sightings. So in this report, it's kind of a bombshell. It says that nearly 150 cases that the Pentagon chose to submit to Congress to say, here is a body of UFO evidence that you asked for. You wanted to see these UFO reports, and here they are. And we can only identify one of these things that we're submitting to you. And then afterwards, after this report, the media that was so hungry for information about this, so excited about this, they just clammed up. And I thought, well, yeah, you didn't get specifics, because I guess you kind of have to have that Congress job to get that. But it was just astonishing. I'm like, where was this fervor to get more information? I mean, the military, the U.S. military, you know, the creme de la creme of the U.S. intelligence agency says they're seeing so many things that they can't identify. Mm-hmm. And then the report, when it comes out, and says that people are satisfied, like, well, okay.
People aren't satisfied?
People seem to be satisfied. The media seems to be satisfied. Those within the UFO community, we always want more, right? Mm-hmm. We're always hoping for that bigger disclosure. But it seemed to calm things down. Just the fact that the report came out, regardless of the fact that it basically said that there's this great mysterious thing happening. And if you think about it, 140 whatever cases that it was, that is actually a very small number of cases, because what they've done is they've collected this information. I think it was like over a decade or whatever. And this is the most that they came up with. I mean, MUFON gets more in Michigan, more in a single year than what the intelligence community put together over several years. Mm-hmm. And that in and of itself means it seems like they held a lot back. Or maybe if they could identify it, it didn't go to Congress. But then you would have thought that they would have stacked the deck and said, okay, here's 10,000 cases or whatever. Here's the small number of them that we can't identify. Mm-hmm. And they still would have gotten the message across that they can't identify everything, but it would have made them look competent that they were able to identify a large body of sightings. Anybody who's willing to go into the weeds and look at them, you know, sure. It's just a very strange thing. And the other thing that I think is unfortunate about this report is that the way that it feels like a marketing campaign. For starters, it's not a UFO report, it's a UAP report. what they've done is they've changed the logo, it almost sort of hitting a reset button, saying, okay, the unknown things in the sky conversation starts now with this definition of these things as UAP. If you are going to talk about UFOs, you're old school, you're probably a little crazy, your fringe UAP is official. All those people who talk about UFOs, those guys are the ones who are nuts. So when you think
about it. Let me see if I'm following this. They're saying those who talk about UFOs are the old school and they're nuts. But if you talk about UAPs, you're up to date. And yes, we'll accept that. Is that what you're saying?
Essentially, that's the spirit of it. Yeah, they're rebranding it so that people can talk about it. The plus side is that people can talk about it with a straight face, you know, in the coffee room at, you know, on a coffee break at work or whatever. You know, the UAP, you know, it's official. And I will give it that UAP is a better term for the phenomena than UFO. Unidentified aerial phenomena is, I think, overall, objectively, a better expression of what's happening than, you know, because you don't know if it's flying, you don't know if it's an object in some of these cases. So unidentified is true in both cases, and to say aerial phenomena, that's a bigger umbrella
well,
to
I'll,
put things
I'll,
under.
I'll grant you that. But it's kind of like saying you can talk about spirits, that's all right, but don't talk about ghosts or you're crazy.
Yeah, it's a very similar
Make
thing.
Any sense to you?
Right. So it first of all, because of this insistence on this new term, and rather than accommodating all the old information, the decades and decades of old information that we have, what happened with this is it feels like anytime you're talking about UAPs now, you're talking about this new track that they're trying to lay down. And the other thing is to give evidence that this is a marketing campaign is if you notice that the videos that they released are Navy videos out over the ocean, not Army, Air Force, you know, go through all the, you know, the Marines, you know, they don't have any sightings over land that they shared with the public. And admittedly, some of these were quote unquote leaked. I don't know about that. You know, you always have to wonder when it comes to the military. But okay,
if it's leaked or if it's leaked on purpose, right?
Right. Yeah. So it seems that what they've done is say, wow, look, there's UFOs way out over the Atlantic, UFOs way out over the Pacific. But by doing that, what they're saying is, you know, there's no need for concern. You know, there's no video of a UFO over Mount Rushmore or, you know, the Detroit. It's all stuff out over the ocean. So it feels a little bit safe. There's no need to panic, dust off that old, you know, nuclear bunker, you know, that was built in the house. But
back in the 50s.
Yeah. So it seems like a very calming way to take baby steps into it. And what will happen as this report continues over the year, I bet every year they'll incrementally increase the information that they let out. Mm-hmm. So that, because right now, people's opinion of the government and the military on the UFO topic is they're lying. They're keeping stuff from us. They're not being straight with the American public. However, if they can drip feed this report out over, you know, several years, you know, sometime in the year 2035, I've heard, or whatever is when they're aiming for this disclosure campaign to finally culminate and say that there's probably life in outer space. By that time, people, you know, if somebody says, you government, you know, you've been lying to us about the phenomena, you've been hiding it, they'd turn around and say, no, we haven't. Every year we've had this report pushing out this information to the public. So it's a way for them to CYA while they're realizing that their position of denial is becoming more precarious. as people have been recording a lot more photos and videos with their cell phones, there is now going to be not just government and military space efforts, but civilian space efforts. And like, you know, SpaceX and Virgin Galactic and what is it? Blue whatever from Amazon.
Right.
Blue Origin, that's it.
Origin.
And so people are going to start going up into space. And what are you going to do? Have everybody who, all these billionaires and maybe millionaires taking these flights up into space? Or are you going to have them all sign NDAs just in case they see a UAP up there? And the other thing is that, of course, with these space telescopes, with the Webb telescope ready to, you know, go out and find even more planets and stars out there, it'll become more and more evident how many planets are out there, how many stars are out there, and then how many planets that might potentially have life. So the...
Oh, they're finding more and more all the time. More and more.
So the position of denial is becoming harder and harder for them to sustain. And they realize that it's only a matter of time now. They could deny it all the way up until there's no way to deny it anymore. And then they've got egg on their face. So this report, these leaks of UFO UAPs out over the ocean is their way of trying to do a last ditch CYA effort before disclosure comes, whether they want it or not.
Well, it's kind of like the Catholic Church. The Vatican has said, oh, yeah, the Pope has said, yeah, of course there's life in outer space. You know, the greater the universe, the greater the God, right? And they're kind of, you know, just in case, and because they can see the handwriting on the wall, disclosure's coming. And I, as far as I'm concerned, this congressional report is disclosure. They're admitting they're out there. You know, UAPs are real, and they're intelligently controlled. Therefore, they must be alien beings, sentient beings. Would you agree?
Yeah. All of the major institutions out there, political and religious and other, will all have to sort of find their path forward with this imminent coming disclosure.
Yeah.
So,
but that way, when the truth comes out, the Catholic Church will say, "Well, yeah, well, we haven't been keeping it from you. We told you that way back when." You know?
Exactly.
So, I have to take a moment just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to We Are Not Alone. We're speaking with the Michigan State Director for the Michigan UFO, for the Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON, Mr. Bill Konkoleski. Bill has had a book out. Now, we interviewed him a while back on his book, Raised in Two Worlds. But give us a brief overview of that book, and then he's got a sequel to that and just came out and very recently. But tell us about the first book and then how this sequel segues in.
Okay, so I have a lot of experiences in my life. I don't have just one or two. I have what some people call my 6-hour story. that if you just sat and, you know, let me run my mouth and say all the weird stuff that has happened to me, it takes about 6 hours at this point to get it all out. My very first memory in life, age 2, is of a little gray being coming up to my crib. This isn't something that I remembered a year later, like, oh yeah, there was something that happened to me when I was little. It burned in my memory the very moment it happened. And I had experiences then at age 4, 7, 9, 10, and several in my teen years, just for starters. And when I started to read a lot of the abduction books that were big, particularly 80s, 90s, I'll pick on those couple decades. There were certainly books before and after, but there was the abduction book industry was really rolling in those decades. And what I noticed when the phenomena was discussed in there, sometimes they would say, oh, and children, when they have these types of experiences, this is how they feel. This is how they perceive them. And I thought, well, I grew up with a great number of experiences. And so my very first book was, this is from a firsthand perspective. You know, this isn't from a third person, a person who's a psychologist, investigator, whatever, talking about it. This is the voice of a child growing up, raised in two worlds, as I put it. My normal life that I experience, as well as the more phenomenal side of it. Mm-hmm. And while I could have just kept going and included additional content, the things that happened in my early 20s, I really felt that the experiences that I had in my early 20s, from about age 20 to 25, were one sort of really long story. If you strung everything that happened in those roughly 5 years together, you have a single narrative of a really strange a path of events. And that it was very easy and neat to separate these two into two volumes. So my second book, Two Worlds Collide, Experiencer 2, Two Worlds Collide. The first one is Experiencer, Race in Two Worlds. In the second book, it just came out November of last year. And it's got very positive reviews from those that I've heard discuss it. Though it is different than the first book, because in the first book I talk about, again, growing up, having these types of experiences. The focus of the second book is something that experiencers don't often get a chance to lay their case out for this particular type of situation, which is that the beings take a very personal interest in the lives of experiencers. They care about where the experiencers live, who they are romantically attached to, sometimes where they work, just a number of their schooling, just a number of things that in the developmental years of the early 20s, a number of things that the entities seemingly want to give little nudges, like, let's make sure you're not dating her anymore. Let's make sure you're living in this type of place. And these things can be subtle or they can be really blunt. And so it's part of the phenomena that when you get to sit down with an experiencer and patiently listen to their life stories, you get to hear, oh, I'm seeing a pattern in your life. And it involves these beings interjecting themselves into various parts of this to make sure that your life follows a particular track. And so the focus of my second book is about that. And the only criticism I've heard of the second one, and I completely understand it from an outsider's perspective, is that it's not a lot of crazy alien stuff.
What it's do you about, mean by that?
Like, getting dragged off the street and, you know, getting an implant and a lot of the very visceral physical high strangeness things. I have a lot of really strange things that I talk about in both of my books, but
for example.
Okay. So, a strange thing that happened with a girl that I was seeing in 1995, she and I were out in a park, after dark, stargazing, and the beings seemingly froze time around us and came up and inspected her and decided that she was not right for me, and then unfroze time And then we were able to run off and hightail it out of there. And the stoppage of time seemed to be very localized. And it doesn't make any sense. And I can't find a way to explain it. And it is one...
You're both aware of the fact that time was frozen?
Correct. Yep.
You're both aware of the presence of the being?
Correct.
Well.
So one of the difficult things about being an experiencer is that you're in a bind. Because if you don't have the scientific background to make a reasonable hypothesis about how some of these high strangeness things can even happen in the first place, then when you open your mouth and you tell somebody, hey, this strange thing happened to me, then people are like, prove it. Or how does that happen? And just because it happens to you doesn't mean you know how it happens. Yeah. And you know, somebody might be groaning like, oh, okay, so you're just saying you could say anything you want and can't prove it. And that's the bind. But it happened, and there was multiple witnesses. But, you know, I'm not qualified to explain how such a thing can happen. And if I don't say anything simply because I don't know how it happened, then these stories aren't coming out. These yeah. truths of the phenomena, these aspects that are happening to many people aren't being expressed simply because of the onus on the witness to be able to explain what has happened to them. And, you know, if I hear the Carl Sagan thing one more time, you know, what is it? Extraordinary truths require extraordinary evidence.
Extraordinary claims, yeah.
Yeah. So I totally get that. It's just that I'm not the one that's qualified to put that language to the experiences I've had, nor are the so many other experiencers that have had this thing that happened to them. I suppose if these beings decided to take a high-profile scientist, maybe that scientist could make a good stab at the technical side of what's happening. But, so that tends to be an issue.
You say that there were several witnesses to this event.
Well, two, she and I.
She and multiple. I, okay.
Two is multiple in this case.
Okay.
The most witnesses that I've had in an event was a UFO situation where me and two friends, this was 89, we were high school seniors at the time, February of 89, we were parked in a car and it was dark outside. And this blue ball of light slowly flew over the car that we were in, my buddy's Chevette. And it looked about car size, the light that went over us. And it was it looked like very football shaped. And then as it went off and passed the car, then this white ball of light came and zigzagged all over the sky. That disappeared. And then a red ball of light appeared in the middle of the sky, grew, and then shrank and then disappeared. And the next day, when I went into work, I went to tell one of my coworkers about it. And she said, oh, were you with the maintenance man here? He saw this UFO last night. So I went and talked to him, and he talks about this blue ball of light he saw in the sky the previous night.
Ah, so there was another witness at a different location.
Correct, yeah.
So, yeah, hearkening back to this the time stoppage, if you watch the show Paranormal Caught on Camera, you smile. I say you do.
No, I know those guys, so it's funny.
Oh, you know the guys?
Yeah.
Put it on?
Brian and Aaron, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, they have a video of an airplane that has kind of parked in the sky, and the car's going along, and I think the car slows down. And so it's not a matter of, you know, the car was going the opposite direction. So it's not a matter of, well, you're traveling along and the plane is coming down, is going to land, and it appears to have stopped. No, it's just the opposite way. also sheep in the field. All the sheep are frozen in time. And they video this.
There I did see that episode, yeah.
You did. And there are apocryphal verses where when Jesus allegedly was being born and Joseph went out from the manger to get a midwife. And he saw the children playing and throwing, you know, in the water and the splashing the water, and the droplets of water are frozen in the air, and people are eating, with putting the food to their mouth, but they don't eat. And it's just, you know, like walking through a three-dimensional picture, you know? So this happens on many occasions and has been reported on many occasions. What is it? Some say, well, we're in a matrix and there's a glitch in the matrix. Well, that's all very well and good. I don't buy it, but there you are. That's an explanation. I'm not one to say that's not the explanation. What is the explanation? I don't know. Do you?
Right. No. And one of the things, and one of the things about that particular case that I'm talking about, where with myself and this young woman, is that it is actually stranger than what I'm describing it here. There are elements of it that really escalate the strangeness of that particular event, and it gets so strange, it's difficult to even talk about. When I wrote it down, how it all went played out, you know, I went back and I rewrote it and I rewrote it and I rewrote it. And then I added onto it all sorts of speculation to how my unscientifically oriented mind in this case could make wild guesses at what happened. But, you know, call that a pitch for my book. But if you want the full further details of it, I would probably, check that out.
So you're not going to tell us these details?
It's tough. It's so tough to talk about. Okay.
Bill,
do you want?
Okay, here, buddy.
And I may got to leave people in suspense to buy the book. But okay, no, I can.
I'm sure that that's not the only event that you're going to refer to in your book.
Right. Yeah. So there are several things. So okay. So if you want, and I may have even talked about it on your show once before, so at the risk of repeating something I may have talked about, I will break the story down a little bit further. So you'll get to see some of the more strange details of it, and hopefully I can do it justice. Okay. So when you are an experiencer and you start dating, there comes a time where you know you have to tell the person that you're with about your experiences. If you tell them on your first date, most most people are going to be like, you know, and so no close encounters is a second kind, right? So when you, but the thing is you have to tell them at some point. So you don't want to lead with it and have them wonder. You want them to realize that you're well grounded, and while that's the case, you happen to have unusual things happen to you. But if you wait too long to tell them, it can feel like you're hiding a major aspect of yourself, for one thing, or even more challenging is they may be around when you have one of your experiences. So she and I had been dating about 2 months at this point, and I hadn't yet delved into the topic of the strange things that had happened to me. And I thought, okay, you know, probably soon I should. And while I waited, I think a little too long at the front loader on what was going on, because that night that we were out there on that hill in that park, we had a blanket laid out and we were looking up at the sky. And while we were there, there was some ambient sound in the woods, particularly some frogs that we could hear off in the distance. And then everything just went dead quiet, absolutely still quiet. and we heard the crunching of sounded like footsteps coming up the hill. Based upon the sound of it and the cadence of it, it sounded like it was a person coming up the hill. Mm-hmm. And we started to freak out. And so we got up from the blanket and moved a little bit further up the hill. And we're standing there kind of just, you know, glancing around, making sure everything is all right. But it's still really quiet. And so then to sort of break the ice, she says, "Oh, look, it's the Big Dipper up in the sky." And I gently corrected her and said, "Oh, actually, no, that's the Little Dipper. And that's the Big Dipper over there. And the reason I know is because I had just taken an astronomy class. And then we started talking about the price of textbooks, college textbooks. And by this time, we realized we can hear the sound of the woods again. So we went back to the blanket. And then everything got quiet. And we heard the sound of footsteps coming up the hill. So we got up and we went to the center of the hill. And she says, "Look, it's the Big Dipper." I say, "Little Dipper, astronomy class, textbooks, you get the..." And at that point, I didn't realize that we had had that conversation just a moment ago. Hmm. I had a strange feeling of deja vu, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it. So what do we do, of course? We go back to the blanket. And then quiet. Footsteps up the hill. We go back to the center of the hill. Big Dipper, Little Dipper, astronomy class, textbooks. And at that point, I realize, oh my gosh, we not only just had this conversation a minute ago, we've had it twice, at least twice. So I'm like, something really weird is going on here, and it's clearly got something to do with the beings. So
did she, you know, realize this deja vu event as well?
I don't know. Right. And so I'll keep going. So it was at that point, like, you know, this is code red. We have to flee. Right. And so the moment I thought that we were suddenly frozen, staring at each other, just a couple feet away from each other, standing there on the hill. And then three little gray guys came up. They approached her, not me, her, and they're looking her up and down, and I could hear their telepathic chatter to each other. "No, not her. She's no good. She's not the one. Mm-mm, no, no, this isn't going to do." And then they left. They walked down the hill, and we were still frozen. And then when we snapped back into being able to move again, we grabbed our stuff and we ran back to the car, hopped in the car, and, you know, hightailed it out of there. And when we got close to her home, I said, "Oh, okay, I'll drop you off." And she says, "No, I'm not ready to go home yet." So we went to Meijer. 30 acres, the all at the time 24-hour store, big box store, and we went in and we were walking up aisles and picking up mops and looking at placemats and just grounding ourselves in a store with people around us in, you know, consumerism, you know, just things that are part of our lives and are comfortable and real. So this was our calming mechanism. And then we went to the pet area that they had at the time, and we watched the hamsters play for about 15, 20 minutes. And then she says, "Okay, I feel I can go home now." So we got in the car. I dropped her off. And the next day, no conversation between the two of us. The day after, she calls and asked me to come over, and she broke up with me. Now, I don't know whether or not she assumed what had happened to us had anything to do with me, but I think she probably knew it all had everything to do with me, and that was about it.
So you hadn't come out and told her about your past experience?
No, I did not.
Yeah, she
and that was her baptism into the
Jeez. Okay. And did she ever talk to you about the event itself, other than...
No, we didn't talk to each other at all on that drive home. And when we wandered around Meijer, I mean, I said, "You want to hear, you know, I'm dropping you off." And she said, "No." And then we went to Meijer and we didn't really talk in Meijer. Wow. And then that was about it. And then afterwards, you know, we weren't really in communication anymore.
You haven't talked to her since?
Not substantively, no. It was like she was friends of a friend or whatever, and at some point I was like, hey, how's it going? She's like, fine, you know, that kind of a thing, but we didn't really get into anything.
But let's not go stargazing again.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I need to take another break just to remind our listeners, you're listening to WHFR.FM, Making Waves, and I'm David Twitchell. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. We're speaking with Mr. Bill Konkoleski. He's an experiencer. He's a state director for Michigan MUFON. And he's the author of a couple of books, Experiencer, Raised in Two Worlds. And his most recent one is Experiencer 2, Two Worlds Collide. And I wanted to go back for a moment just to talk about, I want to touch on the abduction experience as well, but I wanted to ask you, given the congressional report and the Pentagon making the statement, I guess it's the Congress that made the statement, that these UAP are either, they're not ours. They admit that they are not the United States technologies, that they're either Russian, Chinese, or quote-unquote other. Other alludes to extraterrestrial in nature. Now, when you consider they might be Russian, Chinese, or extraterrestrial, which would be more worrisome in your mind?
I would say the other superpowers, the Russian, the Chinese. The reason for that being that if it's extraterrestrials, then the most likely scenario, and you hear it on the ancient alien shows, I guess, is that these beings have been around for a long, long time. If they wanted us to, eradicated, they could have done it a long time ago. Sure, they do interesting things one-on-one with people. Abductions happen and people get scared and things like that. But really, if that's a reality, then it's a reality that we've had for a long time. Mm-hmm. If it's the Russians or Chinese doing it, that means that a military play could be coming up on the world stage. And it could mean the start of another arms race where, all the superpowers suddenly try to outdo each other with fast moving, powerful vehicles with one intent, which is to do harm.
Yeah.
So the best case scenario in my assumption is that it's extraterrestrial.
Yeah. And it would be less worrisome, I hear you saying, mm-hmm. if it were extraterrestrial, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I tend to agree there because, if it were Russian or Chinese or any other foreign power, humans being what they are, mm-hmm. With that kind of technology, and they've had it that long, at least back in the 1947, mm-hmm. And I'm sure before, if not way back since beginning of history, if it were any other foreign power, we would have something really to worry about. What do you think?
Yeah, and it doesn't matter which other country has this type of technology. If they do, technology gets shared, technology secrets get stolen. Mm-hmm. It would certainly mark the next big wave of warfare. And if one country thought it had the fastest, most powerful aircraft out there using all sorts of exotic technology and believing that they're the only country that has that information and has that technology and has those type of aircraft, they may be tempted to use it before their competitors catch up.
Well, don't you think we have captured crash disks and back engineered some of their technology? And if so, then other countries, I'm sure, Russia, they talk about the Russian Roswell and all that. Other countries have crash disks, and they back engineered or attempted to back engineered that technology, don't you think?
What I think is yes. There are people that focus on that type of research, and there are certainly many, many witnesses out there that lay claim to seeing things like this. I can point to probably the closest person to me being just somebody that my dad worked with. Mm-hmm. When he was in the military, he said he was at Area 51, and saw that there were some silver disc-shaped craft there that were hovering around the base, and he was told that that it was basically acquired technology. By the time
you acquire it from a Home Depot, or
so when my dad told me, he was already retired from work, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I would love to talk to this guy. And he's like, well, he was older than me, and he had a fairly common name. And so I did my best to do research to see if I could track him down. I couldn't. The guy would be, if he's still alive, somewhere in his late 90s.
I wanted to know your opinion on that. But back to the abduction phenomenon. I know that there are people that have come forward, probably to you, in MUFON with their stories of abduction. Do most of them coincide with your experiences, or have you heard of something that is even more strange or different, without mentioning any names or going into that kind of detail? Can you share that with us?
Sure. I'm not sure how much Paula Harris got into her sort of overreaching, perspective about the phenomena, but she has a term that I concur with, is when she says all of the above. When she is asked, do you think that they're from another planet? Or are they from another dimension? Or are they time travelers? Or this or that? She will respond, well, all of the above. And so I do hear a wide variety of different types of experiences. And if you put them in the same sort of level of scrutiny, it'll seem to shake out some different origins of where these beings are from, what their intentions are. And yeah, it does seem like there are a variety of different types of entities doing a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. I recently had an opportunity just in the last month to speak with somebody whose encounters were very similar to mine. And not only that, they happened in the same place my experiences happened. I grew up in Sterling Heights, and her experiences were all in Sterling Heights. And on top of that, yeah, the same type of beings in the same time frame too. It was just really chilling. When you hear somebody else, if you're an experiencer, and you talk to somebody else and their experiences are just like yours in many ways, there's that double-edged sword. Because on one hand, you're like, wow, I thought I was crazy. Now, thank goodness somebody else has had this same type of thing too. But the other side of that is that it's a lot more difficult to have that argument with yourself. No, that had to be my imagination. That couldn't possibly happen. Well, then when somebody else has that same exact thing happen to them in stunning detail that's similar to yours, it makes that sort of denial even harder. Because people, when they go through these types of experiences, it's a tough decision. Either you face the fact that this happened to you, mm-hmm. or you deny it to yourself. And there are a lot of that going on too. Yeah, and there are a lot of situations. You can name other parts of people's lives where people get into denial. I'm not even going to go into some of the different aspects where people go into denial about things that have happened to them, but it's tough. And when you have to live with this, you either sort of, you know, aren't yourself anymore when you deny something that has happened to you, particularly if it's negative. There's always going to be something eating at you that you need to get out or come to terms with. But if you do come to terms with it, and you maybe even go so far as to talk about it, that's a pretty fear-inducing thing as well. Mm-hmm. Because other people who have no context of what you're talking about, they are going to judge you. They weren't there. They didn't experience what you experienced.
Right.
They have the luxury of disbelief. You don't. But you're asking them to change how they think about mankind's place in the universe simply because something that happened to you that you can't even prove to them.
Right. We've only got about 5 minutes left, but I wanted to ask you, you mentioned in your books, both of them, Crystal Moldavite. This isn't something typically associated with the UFO phenomenon. What's the connection?
So whenever I'm at a conference and I bring up my Moldavite experiences, those people in the group that have had paranormal experiences and amongst that UFO experiences will have similar experiences, to what I had happen, which is you get this stone and it disappears mysteriously. I had, in my late teen years, I picked up one, and then in the middle of the night, I had this dream of some shadowy figure coming in and taking this crystal. Now, the crystal is green color. It almost looks like a crudely, the way to put it is, it looks like a broken Mountain Dew bottle. Mm-hmm. And it actually came from space. In the former Czechoslovakia, there was this meteorite, and it produced this stone, and it has what a lot of people say are mystical qualities. And I am not one that is deeply steeped in the crystal world, but I picked up some of this upon hearing that. And yeah, that encounter I had where it was stolen in the middle of the night, I looked and I knew where it was and it was gone. I got another piece of it. I stuck it in my pillowcase every night so to keep it from being stolen, but yet it was taken anyway. And then when I got a third one, within under 2 minutes of it coming into my house, it disappeared and reappeared in my house 6 years later. So when I go around talking to people about that, like, here's the thing that happened to me. So many people say, oh my gosh, I had the exact same thing happen. I have this crystal, this Moldavite, and it disappeared on me. And for most people, it doesn't come back, but some people it does. And the ways that the Moldavite disappears, the circumstances it comes back, is generally strange on both counts. And what it means, this is another thing, who knows? And it seems to be specifically Moldavite, not any other type of stone. So after my piece came back after 6 years, I still have it. So
I'm going to ask you, do you still have that?
Yep. Where it went for 6 years and then it came back, you know, jokingly, is there like a closet on board a UFO somewhere where they had it stored and they decided to give it back to me? Yeah.
They put your name on it. And,
yeah. And they wrote the little address tag or something and then brought it back. When it's fun to laugh at, but I have no idea. It just seems ridiculous that some, I don't even know that I can say it's the Greys, that the beings that I dealt with, because all I know is it disappeared and it came back 6 years later. And those who have a lot of high strangeness experience, particularly UFO experiences, tend to have the same thing happens. They get Moldavite, they're drawn to it,
yeah,
and it disappears, and sometimes it comes back.
Along those lines, it's been reported that people have been abducted, and in the middle of the night, they wake up, they have someone else's pajamas on.
You know?
I think there's a story about an American woman and a Japanese woman who were both abducted, and they found themselves in each other's pajamas in the morning. And one gal was in Japan, the other's in America. So go figure.
I remember this one where these two servicemen were on a base, and they were sitting in a vehicle, and then they had missing time. And then when they came to, they were wearing each other's clothes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, really an embarrassing situation, for them.
Where are you two guys been? Eh? Mm-hmm. So if someone has had contact with or abduction experience, who should they contact?
The Mutual UFO Network has an experiencer research team, and it's currently run by Gwen Farrell. Kathy Martin, who had run it for many years, is retired from that spot, but Gwen is fantastic. And there are people that are trained to look at this phenomena on behalf of MUFON. And if you are nervous about reaching out even to a group like MUFON, and if it should be a somehow a more comfortable situation for you to reach out to me about your personal contact experiences, you know, I always enjoy talking to other experiencers.
So where do they contact you?
You can go to, I have a personal website, experiencer.me, as an M-E. And again, it's experiencer.me. And there's some contact information for me there. Or you can find me at the MUFON websites, MUFON.com for MUFON International. And for Michigan, it's MIMUFON.org. I'm an easy target. Friend me on Facebook or any of that. I'm out there.
And of course, there's MUFON, MIMUFON.org is the organization in Michigan. Or just MUFON.com for international. And briefly, where does one go to check out your books?
So my books are available at Amazon, Walmart, Barnes & Noble, online. And if you go to experiencer.me, there's a little bit more about what I do in the books and some of the other books I've contributed to. But yeah, just go to Amazon and pick up my books if you'd like. And or if you see me at a UFO conference anywhere, I'd be happy to hook you up there too.
Beautiful. Bill Konkoleski, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
No, thank you, Dave.
Hope we can do this again.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to thank you, the loyal listener. Go to WHFR.FM's homepage, scroll down to We Are Not Alone, and click on the headline, which will take you to where you'll find my website with all the archived shows. Please join me the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UAP phenomenon. Until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.